This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hey there, it's the Evening Edition with Kelvin Yee, Ayman Rashad and Cam Raslan.
Coming up, we talk about museums and how do they get their artifacts.
And as always, you can join the conversation. You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. All this coming your way on the Evening Edition.
BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:05. You are with Kelvin, Ayman and Cam on the Evening Edition. We are going to talk about our next story, which is actually about museums and how they get their artifacts. So this is after Jeffrey Robertson, a leading human rights lawyer, accused museums in the UK of exhibiting pilfered cultural property and called for the return of treasures taken from subjugated peoples by conquerors or colonial masters.
Big words. Those are all in quotes, by the way. These are not Kelvin's.
No, not me. It's all coming from Jeffrey Robertson.
So Robertson gives the example of the Elgin marbles in the British Museum, which is wanted by Greece. He said the museum tells, again, this is, I'm quoting him, carefully constructed lies and half-truths about how the marbles were saved by Lord Elgin. So this whole argument about how museums get some of the artifacts from historical events, right? Maybe they take it during conquest or stuff like that. So it does raise an interesting question about how museums obtain artifacts, the different ways they can do it, and also the kind of cost and logistics involved as well.
Well, recently, Deputy Minister of Tourism, Arts and Culture, Muhammad Bakhtiar Wanchik, announced plans to exhibit the artifacts of Ramses II and Tutankhamun for Visit Malaysia Year 2020. But Tourism Minister Datuk Mohamedin Ketapi said the insurance coverage alone to bring them here may reach hundreds of millions of ringgit, and that's only if the Egyptian government allows it.
So this segment is twofold then. We're going to be talking about the history of the artifacts that are in museums, not necessarily, well, actually, absolutely not in Malaysia, but these big famous museums in cities like New York, London, Paris, actually almost exclusively just New York, London, Paris, and they're known as encyclopedic museums because the artifacts that they hold cover a vast range of countries and subjects. And then, of course, topic number two, as it were, would be how do you acquire them in the first place? And then how can we in Malaysia actually get to see them here in Malaysia? And some of you might remember the movie Black Panther. And there's a scene in there where the kind of the villain...
Killmonger.
He is in a museum. And he basically takes back some artifacts which he says were stolen from Wakanda back in the day. Wakanda, by the way, being a fictional country. And that scene alone caused quite a lot of conversation at that time about the artifacts that are sitting in these museums. And not as a response to Black Panther, but fairly recently, I think it was just last year, President Macron of France said that he intends for France to return the artifacts which he says were stolen from Africa in the colonial period, which he says people now understand and are ashamed of. He wishes to return them back to France. The case you said just now, the Elgin marbles, these were the marble statues at the top of the Parthenon in the Acropolis in Athens. And Lord Elgin, he took them. He stole them. He stole them. He stole them in, I think it was like 1802 from Greece. But Greece then was under the Ottoman Turks. It was not independent Greece as we know it today. And he took these marbles back to Britain, and now they find themselves in the British Museum. And Greece has been pushing very hard. And there's a momentum amongst many countries pushing very hard for what they see as the necessity to return. So Clooney, the wife of George Clooney.
Amal Clooney.
Is the lawyer on that case, I believe. And then there are some bronze works from Benin, which were stolen by British troops in 1897. And so there's quite a clamor for it. I'm personally in two minds. I'm not entirely sure. Being selfish, there's more likelihood for me personally to witness the bronze of Benin in London mm-hmm. than me ever going to Benin. Mm-hmm. But that's being very selfish. And also, even if I do witness the bronze in Benin, or from Benin in London, because it's so crammed into this vast place called the British Museum, they're not necessarily going to get the platform and the dignity and the information that they deserve so that I can actually appreciate what the hell I'm looking at.
And it would get that if it were in Benin.
If it were in Benin. And if the people of Benin feel it was stolen. Malaysia, on the other hand, I don't think has much at stake here. Our artifacts from this neck of the woods were made of cloth and wood and stuff, things which have all disappeared. I did go to the British Museum, the Malayan section. I don't really remember what was there, actually. Mm. I did go in the Victoria and Albert, though, and I went to the sort of Malayan-Malaysian section. And it wasn't very interesting, I have to say. And it was sort of crammed between the staff canteen and a cupboard. But what did strike me about it was that they were very unremarkable pieces. And it was
What were they?
It was some bowls. Okay. And it was as if somebody had gone to the sort of like 17th century version of Central Market, picked up a few pieces, and then he got transported to London because it's like, oh, these are from Malaya. And so they became enshrined as being representative pieces, when really they were like, okay, quite nice, but they're all right.
But, you know, if you can't ask nicely for them, or if countries are not willing to return them, especially those in Europe, I think what we've seen also last year, there were reports that surfaced and covered extensively by GQ magazine as well, that Chinese artifacts were being stolen from museums all over Europe. And it's actually believed that the Chinese government was involved, right? They have, for example, the Chateau de Fontainebleau. I'm not sure.
Fontainebleau.
I'm probably saying that quite wrongly. So that museum in France was targeted because the bulk of the museum's collection apparently was taken from China by French soldiers in 1860s. So we've been seeing this strange trend where robberies happen at these European museums, or art pieces, artifacts are bought by Chinese billionaires that were Chinese from China in the past, and they would return them back to museums. They would bring them back home to China, one as a show of their wealth, but also to show that they are patriotic. So this movement has been gaining momentum in different ways, and it's been quite interesting.
But that's just a mirror image of what was happening in the 19th century, when you had say rich Americans going off to Europe and buying all this artwork. They had the money. They were able to buy all the statues and all the pieces of art that they wanted. And then they would take it to America, and they were, in a sense, taking it home, because America they saw as being the inheritor of those Renaissance or classical traditions. Mm-hmm. So in a way, these Chinese people are just doing the same thing. But just they are now the ones with the money, and power dynamics change. So London despite Brexit, is not in danger necessarily of its economy reducing to be beaten by Greece. But if Greece is in the EU and London is not, then you know the story changes.
Right. So we are talking about museums today, how they get their artifacts. If you have any thoughts on this, you can send them our way. 7733 2900 is the number to call. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bruce Freddie Morrissey, BFM 89.9.
You are with Kelvin, Ayman and Cam on the Evening Edition. It's 7:20 and we've been talking about museums and as well as stolen artifacts, I guess, but more generally about museums, how they get them, and how, I guess, our museums can start thinking about getting those expensive artifacts. Of course, recently we did try to bring in the Ramses II and Tutankhamun exhibition for Visit Malaysia Year 2020, but just the insurance coverage alone, that price this may reach up to hundreds of millions of ringgit.
Yeah, they're planning to do that next year, but it sounds like the logistics to achieve it is quite challenging.
Oh, very. It would be. I think virtually, well, not impossible, but it'd be very challenging.
Very difficult. Because I'm thinking of the Da Vinci exhibition that was done earlier this year, right? Because what ended up happening was that it was a digital exhibition. I think, Kelvin, you went to it as well.
Oh, it's lovely. It was lovely, yeah. So,
but it's not like the actual physical thing, right? Because I would imagine like bringing that here would be quite difficult.
Well, I mean, some of them are actually attached to walls, so that wouldn't be possible.
But I would say that I would imagine that if they brought in Mona Lisa here, people would actually feel the disappointment of seeing it live, because I saw it live once and I was like,
oh yeah, what's the big deal? Yeah,
no, it's very small.
Absolutely, yeah. And why are there so many people looking at it? The problem with moving exhibitions around the world is the insurance. Mm-hmm. Because these prices are, I mean, figuratively they say they are priceless. They actually are priceless. If, let's say, I think they're talking about there's an exhibition that's on at London right now. It's just begun on Tutankhamun. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And back in the 1970s, there was an exhibition on Tutankhamun. It was the biggest ever. I think it had queues like for 3 weeks around the block in London. And this one now, I think it has about 150, 160 artifacts from the tomb. And if you had, say, the statue of Queen Nefertiti, okay, right? Mm. And you've got it insured up to the hilt, but it's brought to Malaysia and somebody knocks it over, yeah. Oh, right? Yeah. Sure, the insurance company is going to pay up, let's say, 100 million. But the bust of Nefertiti is broken.
Forever.
Forever. So the money is kind of meaningless. And I have a friend who is a curator in London, and he had an exhibition on which was in London, which was all opium pipes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I thought this was a really beautiful thing. And I thought this would be so nice to bring to Malaysia, to Kuala Lumpur, where, you know, there were these opium dens in the 19th century. And,
yeah.
And I thought it would be really nice. And he had a brief look into it, but he said the problem was the insurance. I thought, oh, he just takes those opium pipes, shove them in a suitcase, bring them over. But no. Each piece would have to be insured at great cost, and he gave me a figure. This is just for opium pipes, mind you. It was up into the £250,000 range. Plus, also in that particular case, there was actually still some opium, dried opium in the pipes.
Oh,
so it was actually
those can't be carry on.
Yeah. So unfortunately, we in Malaysia don't get to see these things. But the digital one, the Leonardo ones, that I could imagine we'd be seeing more of those. But so much so that it would be like, not the digital, Van Gogh, whatever.
Well, Sai on WhatsApp says, digitize all the stuffs, which I believe is happening right now. Maybe museums should invest into augmented reality so world history would have no borders. The physical objects can go to whoever wants it as long as it's documented in a digital in digital storage.
I think that's a fantastic idea. I don't know how far augmented reality technology is right now, like how realistic it looks or the logistics behind it, but when it does become a really good thing, then I would love to have things like converted digitally into augmented reality objects.
And then that would be part of the exhibition. The fun of the technology would be part of the deal.
Yeah.
Just as much as seeing the Tutankhamun tomb right there.
Or like if you can like scan the inside of a tomb or whatever and then project it into a room and you can walk in it and experience it. Oh, that's so fantastic.
Yeah. But we in Malaysia, I think that Malaysians are strange kind of people because we do think about those New York, London, Paris museums as being museums. Mm. And because Malaysians have traveled a lot over the years, have been there or would like to go there, there would be people from other countries who don't have that sense of the ability to travel ever. Yes. And so would naturally think of a museum as being something purely local, mm-hmm. because those are the artifacts you can find. Where we don't necessarily think so much of the local. We think, how do we get the Tutankhamun thing over here? But we haven't really spent the time to find ways to tell interesting stories with what we have.
About our own history.
About our own. So, for instance, when Central Market was being done, it was back in the 80s, I think, that was the central starting point for Kuala Lumpur. And so they were digging around, and they dug up a whole bunch of artifacts from that time, from Yap Baloi time, clay pipes and pots and pans, and you name it, probably money as well. And it all got thrown away.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it was just throw it away. Why not? I mean, who's gonna go to the effort, the trouble? Keeping it meant, oh, someone's going to have to pay for this and do it up. So we've lost stuff. But there is still, nonetheless, beneath our feet, there will be something. And then we have to remember, of course, that our artifacts are, as I said, made of wood and cloth. Mm. So there's gone. So what you're saying, Ayman, is with the digital work, there's a lot of work of recreation that can be done. How do we recreate the sights and sounds and senses of the world of a few hundred years ago when we have no artifacts and there will never be any artifacts?
Let me ask you, what local artifact would you like to see in a museum? Like things that something you can't see now, but you would like to see being brought here or being found here?
Found here. I was thinking, like, we don't have fishing on the East Coast.
Okay.
Right? Imagine if there was a museum about fishing on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
Now, the artifacts that are in there would not necessarily be priceless. But if it can evoke and help us understand the patterns of winds, of movements, of peoples, of languages, of religions, of foods, and the dangers of being out in the sea, the charm of Cambodia and the connections to Cochin China and things like that. You know, I would like to see that. And it wouldn't necessarily require famous artifacts. But if we can just find ways to evoke that world and let people understand that world once existed and still exists, then that would be interesting.
Well, part of that is also some of our biological history, I guess. We have this message here from Munif, who is a dinosaur fan, that says that, you know, we freaking discovered a dinosaur in the wilds of Pahang back in 2012. Why is that majestic spinosaurid? It's still not on display. Pick up the pace, guys. My dream of finally seeing a real fossil has been put on hold.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah, we should be seeing that.
We should be demanding that we see this fossil immediately.
Yeah, but also, if you go up to Langkawi, it's one of the few areas where you have so many different geological types there, and you can find fossils there more easily than in Pahang, and that would have been one hell of a find.
Thank you so much for all your messages. This is The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.